Welcome to Sharkpedia. We're your hosts, Megan
and Imani,
a couple of shark researchers that want to bring the science to you.
We're creating a space to learn all things sharks
and their relatives,
answer your questions,
and learn from the legends in the field.
Get ready to jump in.
Let's dive deep into the world of sharks. Welcome back, everyone, to Sharkpedia. Hi, Imani.
Hello, hello.
I'm so excited to see you.
I know, me too. I can't believe that we're pretty much at the end of 2020. Whoa, I can't even say what year it is. My brain was like, it's 2020. And my mouth was like, no, it's 2021, Imani. And that's how we arrived at 2020-21.
I mean, honestly, I saw a meme today that said, like, it was like, everyone's still processing 2020, yet 2022 is in a month. And I was like, oh my gosh, no, stop. I can't. I'm not ready.
No, I don't understand how it's been basically almost 2 years of this, like, weird pandemic esque era that we're living in right now.
Yeah.
And also 2020 was a year ago.
Yeah. Yeah, right. It's still hard to believe. Well,
it's so weird.
I feel like we should tell our sharkies, this is gonna be the last episode for season one. But don't get we're both smiling. But don't be too disappointed. We're only taking a month off, so we're just going to take December off, and then we're going to start right back up in January. So don't worry, it won't be very long, but we thought it would be fun to do actual seasons and end this season and kind of recap a lot of the stuff that we've learned with all of you and things to look forward to for season two.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've got some stats because, as I'm sure all of you have seen, if you're on Twitter or Facebook or really any social media, that Spotify published their 2021 Wrapped. And yes, I am also a Spotify user. And yes, I do freak out about it every year because I have been a loyal Spotifyer since like 2012. And I can tell you that my top song in 2012 was So Good by B.O.B. So, yes, I love my Spotify Wrapped. And they also just so happened to do it for podcasts. And so we got some really fun stats out of the 2021 Spotify Podcast Wrapped. And we're going to throw those out at you so you can bask in the fun sharkiness of it all.
Heck yes, let's do it. What's our first one?
So, we did 15 episodes this season, totaling 844 minutes.
That's a pretty good amount of time. That's a pretty good
season. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think our average episode length is somewhere between 58 to an hour. We have a couple that have gone over just because we literally can't shut up about the paper that we're talking about.
Because it's so cool!
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, 844 minutes, I feel like that is probably what I would expect if I were to, like, guess and calculate it out. But I think it's pretty cool that they give you, like, a total amount of minutes that your episodes have been.
844 sharky minutes. And I've loved every single second of it.
Nerd minutes.
Nerd minutes. Love it. Shark minutes.
Yes. Our second cool stat that we got from this is that people in 47 countries listen to us, which I think is freaking awesome.
It is so cool. That was something I was geeking out about yesterday. I was actually going through our profile and just looking and seeing, like, where have people heard us? And, like, everywhere. Like, someone from Egypt has listened to the podcast, which, like, kind of blew my mind.
Yeah.
Like, Ukraine and a lot of people in Australia. Apparently, I was looking up one of the stats, and apparently we're the number 18 science podcast in Australia.
That makes me very happy.
So thank you to all you Aussies that apparently listen. You guys are great. Or maybe they just aren't. I don't know. Or maybe Aussies don't listen to many science podcasts. One of the two.
Or there's just one person who's listened to all of our episodes more than 10 times, and so they're just, like, topping us out at the charts.
Whoever you are, we appreciate you.
We surely do, and we appreciate everyone who's been super supportive of this idea. I think when we started it, we weren't sure if it would be something that other people would really kind of take to and enjoy in the way that we did, and you guys really kind of took our idea and ran with it, and so we've been extremely happy with the amount of support and the amount of listeners that we have with all of our episodes.
Yeah, me too. I never expected this. You know, we kind of selfishly just did this podcast to hang out together and learn together about shark science because we're both PhD students and getting into that realm. And we wanted a really good excuse to talk to all these other awesome shark scientists. And so it's been really, really cool bringing all of our sharkies with us and getting to engage with all of those scientists. And honestly, today I was almost in tears because people were showing all of their like Sharkpedias in my top five from the Spotify Wrapped. And people were like sending us messages on Instagram, like really sweet messages that I like almost broke me. I just like couldn't believe it. Cause yes. I'm like, who are these? They're not, it's like, it's not my mom. It's not like,
it's like, not my best friend. It's not like, people obligated to support me.
Yeah, exactly. I like, honestly, my expectations have been blown out of the water. So thank every single one of you. I so appreciate every single one of you. You have made this podcast so much more meaningful to me than I ever thought it was going to be, honestly.
Don't make me cry. We're trying to record an episode.
Well, okay, and speaking of which, of like being in top five or whatever, we had 124 people on Spotify that had us as their most listened to podcast on Spotify. 124 people were the most listened to podcast. That's amazing.
So they listened to almost 844 minutes of our voices.
That's a lot of minutes of listening to our voices. But thankfully, you know, actually, it's not 844 minutes of our voice, because thankfully our guests do most of the talking when we have them on.
This is true.
But, you know, I really want to hear more from our sharkies. Like, something I'm really curious about is, do our sharkies want more episodes like this? Like, do they want to hear more about who we are and, like, what our life is like and just, like, our personalities and our relationship? Do they care about that? Do you guys want to hear more of that? Do you want to just stick to the papers and we can just do these as bonus episodes? You know, let us know. Like, reach out. We would love the feedback. I think I put out a thing on our Instagram stories today asking for feedback. So I'll put another one on when this episode comes out because I'd love to hear from you all. So let us know. We're not just here for us, even though, you know, we definitely started it for us. You're on board now and we want to keep you here. So let us know what you think.
Hop on the shark train. It ends in a megalodon's mouth.
Hop on the shark boat?
Oh, yeah. That sounds better. Okay, listen. This is what happened. I was kind of imagining, like, a shark train on the way to Hogwarts, but it's, like, shark school and not Hogwarts, which is where train came from.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine if there was a Hogwarts for shark school? That would be amazing. I would go there.
I would love that. But yeah, I also wholeheartedly agree. I really want to hear feedback because this is also our first time doing a podcast. Yeah. And so we kind of just have been figuring it out as we go, and we kind of just organized it in a way that we thought made sense. But if you are listening to our podcast consistently and you think like, oh, maybe this could be better, maybe you could do this better, then like we would love the feedback. Like we would wholeheartedly appreciate having that level of feedback, especially from people who like listening to our podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And today, we're number 53 on iTunes' top list of nature podcasts. What? It's our first year, and we're number 53.
I know, it's so cool.
It's really cool.
I honestly don't even know how those rankings work. I read that they change like by the hour, basically, depending on when people are listening. But the random times that I've checked, that's where we've kind of stuck around, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah. I do think it's cool. I mean, just the fact that we're like in any ranking at all, that we're like showing up in those rankings at all, is again kind of blowing my expectations out of the water. Just, it's very cool. So thank you all again. But should we like actually recap? Because we have some cool things we want to go back over and recap from some of the our favorite episodes from this season. Amani, do you want to kind of take it off with some of our first ones?
Yeah, I don't think that these are in any particular order. I kind of just listened to episodes like over again, which is kind of weird to listen to myself talk. But yeah. I did enjoy re-listening to them again. And I kind of wrote down the things that I guess blew my mind in the moment when we recorded them. So the first one was when we had Dr. Andrew Nosal on for Triennial Migrations. And he said that soup fins have triennial reproduction cycles.
Let's listen back, shall we?
So in some bony fishes, right, I mentioned skip spawning in the paper, but I did so to contrast with what we're seeing in cartilaginous fishes, which is not like a facultative, like, oh, we'll skip spawning this year if conditions aren't great. So we'll be biennial this year, we'll be back to annual next year. In the case of, you know, lemon sharks and soup fin sharks and anyone that has a multi-annual reproductive cycle, they can't reproduce annually, at least not that I'm aware of. And one of the main reasons they can't is because their gestation period in many cases is so long. At least in the case of the soup fin shark, the gestation period is 12 months. Now, there are some species that have a very long gestation period and annual reproduction. Leopard sharks are one of those. They have a gestation period of 10 to 11 months, but reproduce every year. But the reason they can get away with that is because they have concurrent vitellogenesis, meaning that while they're pregnant and gestating, the ovary is already producing new oocytes, so that by the time they give birth, there's mature oocytes ready to ovulate with the mom.
What? That's amazing.
In the case of soup,
I didn't know that.
In the case of soup fin sharks, yeah. And so in the case of soup fin sharks, which are in the same family as leopard sharks, it's amazing how different they are, they have consecutive vitellogenesis. So they don't really start developing new oocytes in the ovary until after birth. So there are certain like physiological constraints that basically make it so that the sharks can only give birth, you know, every 2 or 3 years, right?
I almost forgot how cool that was.
Oh my gosh, yes. That is absolutely one of my absolute favorite facts that absolutely blew my mind when we talked about it with Dr. Nosal. It blows my mind still. I remember first someone sent me that paper, like a friend of mine was like, look at how insane this is. And it is the first time that we have recorded that there is an associated triennial migration that's with that triennial reproduction. And I find that so cool. Like every 3 years, that animal is just going through such a, like, that's such a long road trip.
Yeah. They're like, can I go home now?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's really cool. Animals are just amazing. And the fact that they always, like the phylopatry, that they know where to go back, like that to me is amazing. They don't even have a compass.
I know. What? I'm out here needing Google Maps and like a GPS to find my way, I don't know, 10 minutes from my house. And they're like, nah, it's good. I'll just swim home. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right, I also have to shout out our first guest that we ever have, whose name is now Dr. Alex McInturf. Woohoo!
Did I hear a doctor?
Yes, you did. So if any of you listened to that first... if any of you listened to that first episode, Dr. McInturf was a PhD candidate at the time. And we went over what that even means because grad school is just really ambiguous and there's so many hoops. And Alex just defended. She's now officially doctor. It's awesome.
Insanity. We're so proud of her.
We are. She updated her Twitter handle to Dr. Surf and Turf, which I find
yes,
so funny.
I saw that. I laughed out loud. It was excellent.
Yeah.
All right. So my next one was from the Shark Parasites episode with Dr. Jimmy Bernat. And the thing that I found weird was parasites can be picky. So he cites that some tapeworms are super selective and will prefer one shark species and will literally like pass up the opportunity for another species because they're like, no, this is my favorite food. This is what I want, which I think is crazy because you would think that you would optimize the things that you would want to live in to maximize the likelihood that you're going to survive.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, I am a 5-year old and I hate my vegetables and I just want that piece of meat. Thank you. And like a chicken nugget.
Roll the clip.
I used to work on shark tapeworms. They are known for being incredibly host specific. Usually each shark tapeworm lives in only a single species of shark, which is really astounding when you think about it, because you know they're going to be encountering other species of shark that live in that habitat, but for some reason they never like persist on that those other species except for their like one host species. And we don't really know why. It could be an immune system thing. It could be a microbiome system thing, but we don't really know.
And that's science for you.
Oh my gosh. That is so cool. I actually forgot about that for a second. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's really cool. I'm glad that we're going back through these. This is actually really fun.
I know, because I feel like some of the things I learned in the moment, I was like, whoa, that's sick. And then we finished it, and like a week later, I feel like my brain almost just like stored it in a drawer somewhere and forgot that I had that knowledge stored up here in this like Bermuda rectangle of my brain that is just papers on fire everywhere at all times.
Okay, I also like talking with Dr. Sora Kim with stable isotope analysis was truly like mind-blowing. I still can't believe the technology and the ability that she has mastered to like reflect on Earth's history. Like that is one of my favorite shark facts now is that I'm like, did you know that you can use shark teeth that were fossilized from the Eocene and you can tell what salinity water that they were primarily in?
How do you even...
I was helping someone learn the methodology, a professor who had been on sabbatical. I was a newly minted postdoc and she wanted to learn this method. So I was like, yeah, sure, I'll help you out. Her name is Dr. Jalen Eberle at CU Boulder. And she was like, oh, so, you know, I hear that you do work with shark teeth. Like I have some shark teeth. Would you analyze them? I was like, yeah, sure. She was like, they look pristine. Like maybe we can get carbon and nitrogen from them. I was like, I kind of doubt that. They're like 50 million years old. Sure. So I ran them for organics, but then I also ran them for phosphate, oxygen, carbonate, oxygen. And the numbers came back super weird. Like I was like, wait, where did you say that these sharks are from? And they're from the Arctic, but the numbers basically came back that they were living in practically fresh water. Like the salinity that when I finally calculated it, it was like 13 or something like that. Yeah, and I was like, whoa, sand tigers like living basically in a brackish ocean in the Arctic.
Yeah.
And then there's someone, named Dr. Kenshu Shimada, who has really developed this method of looking at the tooth crown height and relating it to the size of the shark. So like little shark, little teeth, big shark, big teeth. Makes sense. But he actually has like equations, quantitative equations to put this together. And so in looking through all these teeth and then putting the measurements into his equations, I was like, oh, these Eocene Arctic sharks, they're itty bitty. They're so small. And so then I was like, well, is it because they're at high latitude and they don't have very much light? Or are they like pygmy sand tiger sharks? Like what's going on?
And so or was it a nursery habitat?
Yeah, exactly.
Talk about sharky daycare.
That is insane. That is so cool.
I think that should be everyone's next intro line when they go into a bar.
Yeah, it's your best trivia fact for sure. It's your pocket trivia fact. it's so cool. It is just so cool.
Yeah, I totally agree that it is insanely cool the amount of things that you can figure out from fossilized shark teeth. I was just in awe that entire episode and also just of her work in general.
Yeah, she is brilliant. Like, and also humble.
Oh, yeah, so humble.
I can't wait to have her back on the podcast.
I know. We're going to have all of our people who were on the season one back on the podcast. I know we're going to end up looping back around.
I know. I was like, actually, I really do want every single person back on.
I know. So, I don't know. Season three can be a recap, rewind, new episodes of season one.
Sure, yeah.
Oh my gosh. I think it's time to talk about what was one of my favorite field stories, which was when we had Christian Parton on to talk about entanglement.
This was a good one.
We're going back a few years. So we're going back to when I was an undergraduate here in the UK at the University of Exeter. And I was really, really fortunate enough to be able to do my dissertation on whale sharks. So in the summer before my final year, I flew over to the Philippines. And I was there for about 3.5 months. And it was at a place called Oslob in the Philippines. And you may have heard of it before. It's one of the only, I'm pretty sure it might be the only provisioning site for whale sharks in the world. So basically that means that they feed the whale sharks and it kind of lures them in for the tourists, basically. And it's become somewhat of bit of a tourist trap. There's a lot more restrictions now. I think initially it was just a bit of a free-for-all and was absolutely crazy, but it's become a little bit more restrictive. But the organization that I was working with there was basically trying to sort of be flies on the wall and collect data on the sharks, see if there are any sort of behavioral impacts on them. Is this provisioning, you know, changing the way that they live their lives, all this kind of stuff. So I was a researcher there for, you know, 3.5 months or so, and I was collecting data for my undergraduate dissertation. And when you're there for that period of time, the same sharks generally show up every single day. And so you start to learn via the spot patterns or maybe certain markings, which individuals are which. So you can almost immediately look at the spot patterns or look at, you know, a slight kind of kink in the tail or something, you can tell which individual shark that is. So they were all numbered. So immediately, well, after a kind of a month or so of doing it, you recognize pretty quickly, this is shark number 6, or this is shark number 25. You know, you see them every day pretty much, and you're like, okay, this one. And that means that you start to learn that these sharks have different personalities, right? So there are various things that certain sharks will do, and you start to see this personality come out, and you almost, it's a bit of a strange thing to say, but you get to know individual sharks and what they like doing and this kind of stuff. So my kind of strange field story is basically just sort of learning the different personalities of all these sharks. So for example, shark number 6, who I just mentioned a second ago, sticks in my mind every time because he was a bit of a pain, to be honest. So shark number 6 liked to ram into you. It's a really quite a strange thing.
And those are, you know, not it's, small it's kind animals
of, they are not small animals, and it's pretty much, I would describe it as being hit by a slow-moving bus. And so shark number six decided that he was going to do everything in his power to just bump you. None of the other sharks liked to do this. They all had weird personalities. So, for example, shark number 78 or something loved eating bubbles, right? Scuba diver bubbles. Loved eating it. Literally would follow some of the divers around just eating their bubbles. Obsessed with it. Didn't care about the provisioning food. Loved the bubbles. So, you know, they've all got these different personalities. But shark number 6 was a bumper. Oh, so he liked to just come in and just whack you. Now, the number of times that I got hit by shark number 6 was ridiculous. And there was one time in particular. So at the end of the sort of session, so the sharks are fed from about 6 o'clock in the morning till noon. And then at noon, the fishermen go in and the sharks slowly start to sort of filter away and leave the area. Now, we would put someone in the water between noon and 1 o'clock to basically just sort of swim around the interaction area, recording any sharks that were still there. And generally, pretty much, there's no sharks. They leave very, very quickly after the food goes, but not number six. Number six liked to stick around for a little bit. So there was one particular session in this sort of noon to one session that I got put in the water. And I'm swimming around and I haven't seen a shark for about 25 minutes. And basically all I'm doing is I'm just sort of swimming around. I'm free diving, kind of practicing my breath holds, that kind of stuff, going down, seeing how far I can go and that kind of stuff. And on one particular breath hold, I've decided to kind of go down maybe about, I don't know, 10 meters or so. And I've got to the bottom-ish, the sort of sandbank. And I'm like, okay, my breath is starting to go a little bit. I'm going to head back to the surface. And I turn around and who is maybe 10 centimeters from my face? Shark number six. He's right there. Honestly, I have never jumped or been frightened by an animal as much as I was on that case. Shark number six is there and he clatters into me head first, bang, straight into me. And I'm sort of already needing breath. I've just been whacked by a 6 meter whale shark, right? At about 10 meters down. He's just having the best time. He's loving it. He's absolutely loving it. And shark number six used to do this in every session, pretty much every noon to one session. He'd go around stalking the kind of, you know, the person who was in the water at that point, because people would say the same thing. He, you know, oh, number six is after me again today. And I was like, oh, classic number six.
Yeah.
And he would just continually just bat, 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 bosh you. So that's my sort of mildly crazy field story. I'm probably one of the very few people in the world to have been regularly bumped by a 6 meter whale shark.
Yeah.
You can't make that stuff up.
Oh my gosh. I was truly... I don't think I've laughed that hard on our podcast until I was listening and just like imagining it.
Yes. And also the way that he tells it, like you can tell that he was probably not exactly excited the first time that he turned around and the whale shark was just like in his face. But now he's just like, this is the funniest story of my existence.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That I would use that story all the time if I had it.
Oh yeah.
Great.
One time I was... Yeah. Kind of bullied by a whale shark.
I mean, I feel like we should get like merchandise that says that I was bullied by a whale shark on Sharkpedia. Ask me about it.
I think we should send him like that t-shirt without telling him that we're sending it, and just he'll be like, where did this come from? Why is this at my door?
Yeah we really should try to get some merch. It'd be really fun.
I know, I would. So would I.
Well, I think one of my favorite facts that I just want to pull out, other than the whole, like, find stable isotope analysis incredibly insane and so useful, I did not know that manta rays had the biggest brain of any fish. Thank you, Jessica Pate, for that fact. Yeah. What?
They're also born at 6 feet, right?
Yeah.
Big brains and big babies.
Another cool fact about manta rays is that they have the largest brain of any fish. So we think they're really smart.
Smarticle particles.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
I had to say it. I had to. There was no way that wasn't going to come out of my mouth.
That's amazing. Well, one of the last things I kind of want to touch on about your paper that you mentioned is that the population in South Florida is increasing, and a lot of the mantas that you experienced had injuries on them. And I wondered if you wanted to take a moment to just kind of expand on that and the importance of being proactive about understanding how humans are impacting this population.
You know, first of all, they don't believe me that they're babies. They're like, it was huge. And I'm like, they're born at 6 feet across. And they're like, no.
Born at 6 feet across?
Like, that's a baby?
That's a baby manta.
I did not know that. That is really big.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Mommy is now stretching her arms wide for reference.
Yep.
I'm 5'4". So I have to raise my arms to be a baby manta. And I'm just taking in how long that is.
That baby's bigger than me.
I just was telling someone that fact the other day because I was actually working with a baby bat ray, which are born, they're like 8 inches wide, wingtip to wingtip when they're born. And they're like, wow, they're pretty big when they're born. And I was like, oh, let me tell you, the manta ray takes the cake. For large births, I would choose bat ray over a manta ray any day.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, this is something I didn't know. I did not know until we read this paper and you shared your experience that hammerhead sharks will list on their side. And that was something that Dr. Mark Royer had told us about. And he actually proved that scalloped hammerheads spend a large amount of time on their side. I think it was like 40% of their time is spent swimming on their side. What?
I know. It is the absolute wildest behavior, and it's even crazier to watch because if it was any other shark and they were on their side, you'd be extremely worried about their release status.
Right.
But with hammerheads, it's just like,
nope.
Okay, do your thing, buddy.
My dorsal fin is a side sail, and my head is kind of like another weird fin. So here we go.
Let's listen back to Dr. Mark Royer.
I personally had never actually heard of this rolling behavior. However, I work, you know, not in tropical places where you see hammerheads. So is that something that you could typically see? Like if you were diving, have you seen that? Did you know that they did that? Side swimming behavior?
I myself, prior to the study, I had not heard of that actually as well either. I feel like for most of the times when people see great hammerheads, usually when I've seen, or like when I've seen photos or footage of great hammerheads, it's usually at that site in Bimini where they're, but that's a provision site. So they're swimming in their bottom and that's not like their usual, so you're not seeing them just kind of generally cruising. In terms of for scalped hammerheads, they're kind of, unless you go to the right place in the world, they're kind of elusive or difficult to find sometimes. And the times where I've seen them in the water, it was very fleetingly. However, there were people who have seen them at their aggregations in places like such as the Galapagos or in the Gulf of California, and in our particular case off the Big Island of Hawaii on the Kona coast, there are these aggregations of female scalloped hammerheads that are seen during the winter time, and some wildlife or underwater photography friends of ours, Darren Verbeck and Corey Foltz, have taken these photographs of these aggregations of hammerheads off the Big Island of Hawaii.
Wow.
And from those photos alone, you can see it's hard to tell because they're in like in the open ocean. So you see around them, there's nothing but blue. So it's hard to see a reference as to which way is immediately up, but just relative to each other, you can see some hammerheads are like at like a 45 or 90 degree angle from each other.
Right.
So regardless of which one's upright, you know that like some of them are swimming at a strange angle. So at least for those who have seen that, they know that they've known that like scalloped hammerheads do sometimes swim at these weird angles. But you know, when a shark kind of leaves our sight, what they do for the rest of the day is kind of a little unknown to us. So it wasn't known just how prevalent this was and how they do it. They actually spend the majority of their time swimming at these strange swimming banked angles.
Yeah. So at this point in my life, I've seen and or helped with around 5 scientific like tagging workups of great hammerheads. And they all do the listing behavior when you release them. So we'll like push them off the platform to push them into the water. And they don't just swim straight off like most any other species does. They always list off to the side.
Meaning like, at an angle.
Yeah, so instead of just driving like completely straight, they'll like swim at an angle. And then this paper came out and Dr. Catherine McDonald, who I've been working with, she was like, yeah, for all these years, all of the people who like do scientific workups on hammerheads were saying that their release condition was like fair or poor because with any other shark, them tilting on their side is like not what you want as a release behavior. And so people would like swim them off and like try to make them like swim straight instead of off to the side. So everyone was just like messing with hammerheads when they were just trying to help themselves when we were releasing them. And we just saw 3 great hammerheads last week. And one of the ones that we released listed at like a 45 degree angle when we released her. And I was like, this is crazy that like for all these years, everyone just thought that they were not releasing well and trying to straighten them. And the hammerheads in their heads are probably like, can you just get off of me? Like, I'm doing what's best for me.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
That's very cool to hear, because I've only ever worked with scalloped hammerheads. I've never done work with great hammerheads before. So that's actually very cool to hear that, like, when you release them, they will sometimes go at those banked angles.
The sharks are just doing their sharky thing.
I think my last kind of fun thing that I learned was our cookie cutter shark episode. I really liked learning that they actually eat a lot less large apex predators than we think that they do.
Yeah,
just for the sheer purpose of pointing out that just observations does not mean something is a fact or necessarily true. And that's why research is so important, because you get all of these things that you don't see all the time with your human eye or just by purely observing. And I don't know. I thought that was super awesome.
Yeah, that is super cool. Again, like, just, I love being proven wrong about our assumptions. It's also very cool. I think one of the last things I just want to emphasize, it's not really a fact that I learned, but we had Akshay Tana on from Sri Lanka talking about sawfish in Sri Lanka. And I know that was the only episode that I did on my own, which, let me tell you, love when you're here. Can't do it without you, Imani.
It was a great episode, though.
It was a really great episode, and I think it really emphasized that talking to fishers and incorporating fishers and their ecological knowledge in fisheries management and learning about a species, like, you aren't doing shark science right if you don't incorporate them. And I just think that the study that Akshay brought onto the podcast was a really great example of that.
Buckle up for some great advice.
What worked in our favor was that, well, we've been serving Sri Lankan fisheries quite intensely. So we had good networks and good strong networks with the fishers. And so that helped a lot. So that's something that I would advise anyone who's kind of designing questionnaires to do is, you know, you pick a study where you have a good amount of background information and that you have already built up a stronger working relationship with whoever you're going to interview, because it's quite hard to be someone new who shows up and starts asking questions. That comes in with the languages as well. There's two languages in Sri Lanka, and we had researchers who spoke both, and then they went to parts of the country where they would be able to communicate effectively. This also happened because that's where they used to survey. So our survey team also kind of is designed in a way that we are going to the places where we are most comfortable speaking to the fishers. So we've also developed relationships with the fishers. So that comes together quite nicely.
That's social science at its best.
I'm super excited. I'm not going to say too much because I haven't started this yet, but I'm about to start a social science paper where I get to go interview a lot of the shark science or the shark fishers around San Francisco. And I'm really looking forward to that because a lot of the fishers have been calling me and telling me a lot of really cool information. And they're the ones that have some of the primary concerns about the seven gill population that we're seeing. So I'm really excited to talk to them more and listen to them and see what suggestions they might have, because they're on the water all the time working with these animals. So if you're curious about how to use fishers and their knowledge, go back and listen to that episode, because it was such a great example of that.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. Well, we had a blast recording this first season, and we're super excited for season two, which was going to come back in January. We already have some interviews lined up.
And oh, yeah.
If you have any papers, even if it's not yours that you want us to have on the podcast, please don't be afraid to DM us on Twitter or Instagram or send us an email with that paper link, because we will absolutely reach out to the first author and ask them to come on the podcast if they want to.
Absolutely. We're happy to reach out to the authors ourselves, but if there's something more you want to learn about, please send it our way. I can't wait. Should we tease a couple of the things that we're starting season two with?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So I'm really excited. We're going to be having Jake Jerome on. He's one of the co-founders of the Field School, and he's a shark physiologist. And he's going to basically break down what shark physiology is for all of our listeners. It'll be like basically an intro to shark physiology and how he uses shark physiology to learn about species. That actually, it matters a lot. And I'm really, really excited to dive into that with him.
Yeah, I mean, I love Jake. So hi, Jake. I love you. I'm also very excited, especially because I have learned so much from him about physiology, and I feel like he's an excellent communicator for something that could be really difficult to understand. I feel like he breaks it down really well and explains kind of really complex physiology interactions that happen within sharks in a way that you can get and also feel excited about, since he's always so psyched to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. I can't wait. Ah, okay, I can't wait, Sharkies. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much for sharing all of your kind words. I cannot tell you how much that has meant to me. And we cannot wait to get back in January and keep talking with all of you. So thank you again. And with that, everyone, until next year.
Swim you later.
Yes. All right. That was perfect. Love it.
It was. That was great.
Hey Sharkies, thank you so much for supporting us season one. Please don't forget to rate and subscribe so other people can find us in season two. What's wrong?
There's a really big spider. I don't know what to do. Megan, no, it's really big. I'm taking a finger. I just looked down and it was there crawling, and I didn't want to interrupt you, but now I have to light the office on fire.
I'm sorry, I'm not there to move the spider for you. Your face is just epic right now.
I don't know what to do. It's really big.
Move it.
Ah, oh my god, it moved. Where did it go? Oh.
Oh my gosh. I'm putting this in a blooper something.
I don't know what to do. Is that a hard... Should I throw a fire alarm at it? It dodged it. I don't know what to do. Megan. I'm switching rooms. Fuck this. I don't want to be here.
Oh my gosh. I feel like I'm watching a scene from Scary Movie or something.
Hold on. I'm moving to a different room.
Running down a dark hallway, chasing away, running away from the spider, the monster spider.
Okay, are there any spiders in here? Okay. I think we're fine.
Good job.
I survived.
Are you okay?
Yeah. Shut up. It's fine. It's fine. I took a picture. It's fine. This is a thing. I have a very irrational fear of spiders.
Oh,
but
so
Megan,
sorry.
It was really big. I sent you a picture.
I would really like to put on the record that, like, you don't need to fear sharks, you know? We're shark scientists. We'll jump on a bull shark all day long, but see a spider? Amani's done.
I have no shame, okay? I am absolutely terrified of spiders to the point that I, like, literally can't even kill a small one. Because I wouldn't want to kill it anyway, but I can't even trap it under a Tupperware because I think it's going to, like, jump into my face.
Oh my god, I love you. Okay. Okay, shall we jump back in?
Yeah. I don't actually remember. I know what you were talking about, and I know you finished your sentence, but I was not listening.